Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. And this segment, we're talking about heart health and treatment options for advanced heart failure. Our guests, we have three guests for you today. Roger and Rochelle Thompson live in Pickerel, and Roger recently received treatment for advanced heart failure. Roger, welcome. Thank you for joining in today.
Thank you very much. It's good to talk.
Yeah, and Rochelle, thank you so much as well.
Well, thank you.
We'll hear some more from them as we go along during the show. Also with us, Dr. Vijay Krishnan, also known as Dr. Vijay. He's a board-certified advanced heart failure cardiologist, serves as medical director of the Frederick and Medical College of Wisconsin's Mechanical Circulatory Support Program. Dr. Vijay, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you. Thank you, team. Thank you for having us today.
Well, great to have you, all three of you here. And as we talk with our three guests today and you're listening in, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're managing life with some heart failure issues. What treatment options are you exploring? Want to hear from you. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Dr. Vijay, let's start with you. What is advanced heart failure?
So advanced heart failure is also known as end-stage heart failure. So people who are diagnosed of a weak heart with guideline-directed treatment, medical treatment, including a device which is called an ICD or CRT. If those patients start feeling more symptoms, like more breathing trouble, more leg swelling, had to go up on the doses of the current medicines. Sometimes patients cannot tolerate the medicines they were able to tolerate 6 months ago or a year ago. If they are getting readmitted to hospital multiple times for heart failure, we say at least once every 6 months or so, or else sometimes patients will have rhythm issues like ventricular tachycardia, where the heart rhythm goes into trouble, and then we have to give ICD shocks. These are the things we look for to distinguish between simple heart failure versus advancement towards an end stage of heart failure.
And do we know the causes of advanced heart failure?
Yes. So the main causes are any heart attack in the past, any blockages in the arteries which are not fixed on time. That can cause the heart tissue to die, and over a period of time, it can progress into heart failure. The other causes could be simple viral infections, parvovirus, even COVID infections have resulted in heart failure. So that is another possibility. We also have genetic conditions which can cause muscle injury or muscle disease in the heart. We have conditions like sarcoidosis, amyloidosis. These are other infiltrated that is volant in the heart, which can cause advanced heart failure.
And so the advanced heart failure, essentially it means that conventional heart therapies and symptom management strategies are no longer working, if I have it right.
Yes, yes.
So the treatment, what are the treatment strategies for heart failure?
So when we start with the diagnosis of heart failure, we start with medical treatment, go over couple of types of medicines, like including beta blockers, aldosterone antagonist, ARNI, MRAs, and SGLT2 inhibitors. So these are the basic core medicines we use to help with symptom management and help to recover the heart function. We also have diuretics to help with extra fluid the heart is not able to handle. And that is also part of the main treatment. once we do that for 3 to 6 months and see whether we can titrate the medicines to what is required as optimal treatment, and we check the heart function again and see whether the heart function is getting better, the patients are getting better. If they are getting better, that is a good thing. We can watch and do medical treatment. If we do not see improvement or if the patient is feeling more symptomatic, then we look at further testing in the form of catheterization, where we measure the pressures in the heart as well as pressure in the lungs. Is pushed around every minute in the body. We also have a stress test called the cardiopulmonary exercise test, which also looks at the heart and the lungs together. And these are the way we look at the management plan and closely, serially follow the patients.
Well, I have a friend who had a heart transplant, and I'm wondering, obviously, one way to treat advanced heart failure is heart transplantation. What determines whether someone is or is not a candidate for a transplant?
It's a very good question, Larry. So heart transplant is one of the surgical treatment options for end-stage heart failure. And this is available for most of the individuals. One of the cutoffs we do, or one of the indices determined by the fact that patient is a younger patient, anybody more than 72, 74 years of age, we do not offer. Some programs can offer up to 75. Ours is 72 to 74. If you're robust, we offer heart transplant. So age is one of the factors. If you have any active or recurrent cancer or high lung pressures independent of heart pressures, that means your lung is also involved, or you have other organ failures like liver failure or kidney failure, which needs more than one organ to be transplanted, that makes it a little more in-depth discussion. One other very important factor is if you cannot wait for getting through to a heart transplant. So some patients qualify, but they are very sick and they do not have a leisure of waiting for months to get to a heart transplant. And one other thing we look at is your diabetes well controlled, your nutrition is good, you are not too much obese. So some of the substance abuses, we need to make sure they are inactive. That means you're not using tobacco or similar products. So those kind of things factor into the candidacy for heart transplantation.
Roger Thompson, I want to turn to you. What was your life like when you lived with advanced heart failure?
I started my issues in 2002 with viral heart failure. I had everything else was fine. Veins and arteries were all good. I just had a virus attack the heart. Took me down to about 30% of heart function in 2002. And I got back to about 50%. And I did real well with that. And in the last 4 or 5 years, it started declining. I got down to 30% of heart function, and I was marginal. But then it got down to 10% of heart failure. I was still able to somewhat function, but it put me into the heart failure clinic, and that's where the LVAD device was recommended and installed.
And Rochelle, this has got to be hard for you, or was hard for you. How did you and Roger work to keep things positive after Roger was diagnosed with advanced heart failure?
It changed a little bit, but I would always tell myself, somebody out there has it worse than you guys do. So that kept us going.
Well, it's a good way to look at it, for sure. Dr. Vijay, let's talk more about that, the left ventricular assist device. Explain what it is.
So as the name sounds, or expansion is, so the heart failure, the heart has two major chambers, the right side and the left side, and two collecting chambers on the right and left side. So the main pumping chamber for the heart is the left ventricle, and that pumps the blood to the rest of the body, makes you feel energetic, and blood flow goes to the rest of the organs. So when that organ or that side of the heart fails, the heart does not pump blood out. So what left ventricular access device does, it is actually a heart pump. So it is implanted surgically, open heart surgery, which takes around 4 to 6 hours. And we place a mechanical pump very close to the heart with a graft, which actually goes into the heart, takes the blood from the heart, and pumps it to the aorta, which is the main artery which comes out of the heart. And that's how the patients get the relief from the congestion as well as get the energy, because the blood is flowing in the right direction to the rest of the body.
Oh, so that device, are there many ways that it can be used for treating advanced heart failure?
So we usually use it to support the left side of the heart. Mm-hmm. From time to time, it could be used to support the right side of the heart, but most of the time it is used as a temporary device at that point. We do not make it as a permanent option on the right side of the heart. It is more tuned to work in the left side of the heart.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, I guess I'm not surprised at myself, but I was not aware of this device. How long has the left ventricular assist device been around?
So the trial started in the late 1990s, and in 2000 we started the implant. That is called the first generation of the heart pump, which used to be weighing around 5 pounds. And it used to sit in the abdomen because it was huge, so it couldn't sit in the chest. From there, we went to the second and third generation, and now we are at the fourth generation of the pump, which is actually magnetically levitated, and it has less moving parts and less contact with the blood. So bleeding and the pump clotting is very minimal. And we are at that fourth generation pump currently in the United States.
Roger, what kind of care were you receiving before you had your left ventricular assist device surgery?
I had standard cardiology visits and everything. I also have a pacemaker defibrillator, which was installed in 2002 when all my heart failure started. But virtually cardio visits every 6 months. I've done pretty well, still active and everything. I've been active all the way through this. Hasn't slowed me down greatly, although Dr. VJ has some no-nos for me, but I keep going.
And how did you find out about these devices and that it was an option for you?
Well, up here I was being handled by Aspirus, and after I'd done cardio rehab with them, it was determined that I was in what would be called cardiac failure. And that sent me to a couple places. I could either go to Frederick or UW-Madison or the Mayo Clinic, and Frederick worked for me. So that probably got shifted over to Frederick, and they totally handle the LVAD. Nobody else really in this area does anything with it.
Boris in Wausau has a question for us. Let's go. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll get to that in just a minute. Just a reminder that we have three guests for you today: Dr. VJ, cardiologist at Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin; Roger Thompson, received a left ventricular assist device actually in 2023, and Rochelle Thompson, married to Roger and supported him through his recovery. They are our guests, and you can join in at 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about a mechanical device that really offers another option for people diagnosed with advanced heart failure. Our guest, Dr. VJ, cardiologist at Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin; Roger Thompson received one of those devices called a left ventricular assist device. He received it in 2023, and Rochelle Thompson, married to Roger, supported him through his recovery. Again, you can join in 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. And now, Boris and Wausau, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. My name is Boris Ackner. I'm actually a cardiac anesthesiologist. I used to work on the East Coast in a busy transplant center, practicing now in Wisconsin, actually in Wausau. And my question is regarding the use of heart failure medications in our population, because from what I think, that some of the medications are underused, for example, the SGLT2 inhibitors that you mentioned, Dr. Vijay, as well as just simple medications like aldactone, that when we see patients with lower EFs, it is more often than not that they are not on perfect medications, be it that they are in the North Woods where they don't have easy access to advanced heart failure cardiology, or financial reasons, because SGLT2 inhibitors still are very, very expensive. And how does this compare to other countries where there's heart failure treatment maybe available to a lesser amount? And that is my comment and question.
All right, Boris, thank you. Dr. Vijay, comment.
Thank you for joining us. So heart failure treatment, as I mentioned, it's not without side effects as well as the expense part too. So we usually, the stronger medicines, the beta blockers, aldosterone antagonists and ARNI type of medicines, especially aldactone, which is one of the medicines mentioned, and SGLT2 inhibitors, Jardiance and Farxiga, the two types of medicines available. They have to be carefully used in select populations. So we recommend before getting out of the hospital, if the diagnosis was made in a hospital, we try to attempt to start these medicines and apply for some sort of assistance if the cost is prohibitive. So ideally, yes, all the four medicine groups, if we can start on a patient and start titrating on an outpatient basis, that is an ideal situation. Now, if we have insurance coverage issues or cost prohibitions, we have to work with what we have. That is the unfortunate state. But I think there are programs where you can get samples, but they are not without an end date. So I completely understand the dilemma that we need all these medicines, but some of them still have some coverage issues.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about the device. Can that be at least partially covered by insurance?
So the LVAD, if you're asking about that, yes. So we have a robust team at Fredet MCW who will take a look at people with their insurance, their coverage, and we apply for disability if that is needed, if we apply for assistance if that is needed. So we will support as much as we can if the patient is a good candidate and the patient and the family says, yes, we would like to pursue this. So we have some assistance programs, and we'll do whatever we could in our capacity to support that from happening.
Yeah. Boris, thanks again. Sid in Janesville, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Sid.
Hi. I just wanted to share that I've had a kind of heart failure. I had two heart valves replaced along with a blockage behind the heart cleared up. And that operation happened in January of 2019, and I've been surviving okay. We had to make some adjustments to my medications along the way, but other than that, I haven't had any problems. I was having some problems before that, obviously, with all those problems, but I try to walk 3 miles a day in three separate 1 mile walks. And the one medication that had to be adjusted is something called Tamsulosin. It was It manages the pace of the heart.
Mm.
Yeah, metoprolol.
Metoprolol, yeah. Well, so a reasonably good outcome. And Dr. Vijay, I think we've made a whole lot of progress over the years in dealing with the heart.
Yes. So all these medicines started in 1970s with the initial trials with beta blockers. Then in 80s, the ACE inhibitors were developed and trialed. The ARBs were developed at the same time. In 1990s, we saw all the big trials for the beta blockers. The metoprolol is one of them. And towards the end of 1990s is when the aldactone trial came, digoxin trial came. The RNA, which is one of the newer medicines, came in later half of 2000 to 2010. And then recently, if you ask me, like, we have been plowing through and making good progress in the field.
Yeah, it sounds that way for sure. Sid, thank you very much for your call. Roger, I want to go back to you. Now you have had this device put in. What was the recovery process like after the surgery?
Well, it was a total open-heart surgery, so they split your whole rib cage. It was almost a two-week hospital stay. I think I did very well in recovery. I was able to walk around after a couple of days and just kept walking more and more at the hospital. Got out kind of in record time. I did have a little bit of a bump in the road. I had to go back in for a while. I did have some internal bleeding and some fluid on the lungs, but that got solved, and overall, that was about it. So it's about a 2 to 4 week recovery, in my opinion.
And I mean, what's, compare your life now versus before this.
I'm still very active. I obviously can't be in water, can't swim or anything, or bathtub. The main thing for me is that you are either carrying around the 5-pound battery pack, and you have the cable coming out of your belly about by your belly button, or at night I am plugged into basically a 25-foot extension cord that plugs into the wall. That's a control unit for nighttime. So it's a bit of a adjustment, but it's much better than the alternative.
Yeah. And Rochelle, what should family members, or what was it like for you, and what should family members or caregivers expect as their loved ones heals from left ventricular assist device surgery?
It's a lot of worry. My thing is that I had to change his bandage and make sure there was no infection going around the tube. And I think my biggest fear was I was going to screw it up somehow.
Yeah.
You know, and it took me a long time to get over that. And now I look back at it and think to myself, why were you so upset with this? So you just got to learn to take one day at a time.
And it sounds like the daily or the upkeep, I'm wondering what kind of upkeep does the device require? Is it, well, it sounds like it's daily in some ways, but then there may be monthly things as well.
I believe it was like every 3 days where I had to change it in the beginning. And now it's like once a week. So, and once you get over the fear of not screwing things up, it's a piece of cake now. it's just part of your routine.
Yeah. Mary Beth called, couldn't stay with us. Mary Beth from Boulder Junction. She says the Inflation Reduction Act reduced the cost of her husband's heart medication, and that was a huge help. Dr. Vijay, comment on that?
statins, and it has been recognized as one of the most common costs for the healthcare if we are not treating heart failure properly. So today we are getting more support till the newer medicines are a little bit exempt from that. So they have some years they can charge more, and then they come to a baser or lesser price for the public. So definitely, yes, the government programs are helping the patients throughout the heart failure phases.
Yeah. Dr. Vijay, cardiologist at Frater of the Medical College of Wisconsin, Roger Thompson, who's had the left ventricular assisted device installed, and Rochelle Thompson, married to Roger and supported him through his recovery. Questions about heart health as we move along, you can join in too. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. And I've been asked to mention that tonight at 8 o'clock, I hope you'll tune in to WPR for live coverage of the ABC News presidential debate simulcast from NPR. Former President Donald Trump is the Republican candidate. Of course, the Democratic candidate is Vice President Kamala Harris. It's scheduled to take place in Philadelphia, and our NPR's Mary Louise Kelly hosts this live special coverage, and NPR correspondents who cover politics will offer their analysis and help put the debate into perspective during this election season. So tune in for the ABC News presidential debate simulcast from NPR. Starts at 8 o'clock tonight here on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. In the meantime, questions, give a call as we talk about heart health with our guests. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Dr. Vijay, why should people prioritize heart health? It's something that I guess we don't think a whole lot about when things are going well. So talk with us about that.
First and foremost, even before you're born and taking the first breath, the heart is pumping the blood around. So that is a pump which is working even when you are with your mom. So I think that is one of the key factors of improving or giving blood flow to the rest of the body to make sure you're functioning well. Your other organs are also dependent on the blood flow. So it's like a machine, which technically there is a reason why we say the heart of the machine, because that's how the heart is to the body. So the key things we need to be careful is that even if when you go to a routine exam and you find that you have a kidney problem or a liver problem, and unless and until you have a specific reason to have that, you always have to make sure that the heart is working fine. You know, so that's why a visit to the primary care is what we recommend on an annual basis. And if there is any symptoms like leg swelling or fatigue, unexplained fatigue, or breathing trouble, lightheaded, dizzy spells, any of those things happen, it is worthwhile to have a discussion with your primary doctor as a starting point. And if your primary doctor feels that, hey, maybe you need to see a heart doctor, get a checkup, I would recommend that to happen. You know, we live in a world where we are surrounded by processed food and lack of exercise. As our grandparents did more walking exercises, we don't do that much. So a lot of things can contribute to us developing heart problems down the line.
Vern in Boyd called but couldn't stay with us. He's wondering about the side effects of heart medications and which are best combinations in terms of health. He thinks the ANG2 blockers are the best. Would you comment on that, Dr. Vijay?
Yes. So I always say patients don't read textbooks when they're sick. So I always try to tailor the treatment for a particular patient. Some patients are able to tolerate one medicine more than the other. So it is trial and error, which is a scientific way of doing it. With Mr. Thompson also, Mr. Roger also, we did the same. We tried some medicines to make sure he is able to tolerate. So we do that with every patient. We try to understand what their body needs are, and some of the medicines patients are able to tolerate. Now, when we say not able to tolerate, we look at a few things. One is symptoms. That is, if the patient is getting lightheaded, low blood pressures, or fatigue, the beta blockers can cause them. But some other medicines like ARNI or MRAs, the aldosterone antagonist, those medicines can affect the kidney. So we had to watch the kidney function very closely while we are on this medicine too. So there are some clinical monitoring as well as some lab monitoring we do. In addition to every 6 months to a year, we check the heart function to make sure are we making good progress in these situations.
Someone else is wondering about heart, about blood pressure and relationship to heart issues. If the blood pressure is high or low.
So, one of the most common causes of heart failure is high blood pressure. On long-term, high blood pressures can affect the heart, and then heart can sort of weaken over a period of time. So when we start, we may be having high blood pressures, and that is one of the reasons why we try to treat them, both with the diet as well as with medicines. When you are advancing into end-stage heart failure, what you will be facing is more like low blood pressure because your heart is not able to pump that well. And you will not be able to produce that much of a high blood pressure. So we are looking at hypotension, lightheaded disease, well, some people pass out. So those kind of things are more common when the heart is getting more and more tired with the pumping function.
And what should you, and so if you are, let's say it's a warm day and you're outside a bit and you feel a little lightheaded, is this a clue that maybe you ought to be going and seeing your doctor?
If it is one-off event and if you could explain like, oh, I was not hydrated properly, and also depending on like whether you have any other comorbidities, like if you have any other disease problems, that helps. But if this is a one-off episode, just watch it, discuss with family so somebody other than you know that this happened. But if this is happening more often and not related to a very hot day out there, then it is worth discussing with your primary doctor as a starting point.
John in Sun Prairie has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, doctor. And just had a question as to what is qualified for being in this heart failure status. Is this like a CF val or EF value done with a electrocardiogram or the other electro tests that they do for heart where they test for how strong your heart is pumping?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are a couple of ways we could assess that. So one is the heart pumping is down, that is low ejection fraction, which could be assessed based on an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of the heart. That will look at both the right and left sides and look at the valves, whether there is any leaky valves, all those things we could understand. Now, certain other patients may not have a weak heart, but may have a stiff heart. Like people with sarcoidosis or amyloidosis, they are infiltrative heart disease, and they may have a good pumping heart, but they may have a bad relaxation. They may have problems like rhythm issues, like ventricular tachycardia. So those patients, we also look at the EKG. We make sure we check whether there is any other rhythm issues. So It is a clinical diagnosis supported by investigations. That is the best way I could put it to explain heart failure.
John, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Taking a look at heart health on the program and looking at this left ventricular assist device, but talking about heart issues in general with our guest today, Dr. Vijay, cardiologist at Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin, and Roger and Rochelle Thompson. Roger received a left ventricular device in 2023, and of course, Rochelle is married to Roger and supports him through his recovery. Again, you can reach us at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at heart health on the program today with our three guests. Great to have them with us. Just a note, tomorrow on the show, our team is traveling to La Crosse. Looking forward to that. We'll talk about the Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife and Fish Refuge. It's celebrating 100 years of conservation. And then learn how the city of La Crosse is creating more opportunities for outdoor recreation. That's tomorrow at 11 on the show. Right now, though, heart health, Marty has a question, emailed with a question for Roger. Did you have to change your diet at all through your heart health journey?
Yeah, I'm supposed to. Generally, I do pretty well, but I certainly avoid salt, caffeine, alcohol 100% as much as possible. I do wander into the ice cream container once in a while, which is probably not the best for me, but I've been holding a pretty healthy weight. I've been around the 210 mark post-surgery, so I don't think I do real bad, and I do exercise a fair amount.
Yeah. And Rochelle, have you had to make any changes in your own life in relation to Roger's situation?
I had to learn not to cook with salt anymore. And now when we do taste something and it's like in a restaurant, it's like the salt is way too much for us. So it makes you wonder all the salt that's in all the foods. You know, I had to do a lot of reading of the labels and, yeah, it took a time, but now it's, you know, it's easy. But, yeah, you have to learn a few things.
And get used to a few changes at least from the sound of it.
Well, you actually don't need salt. So
is there anything else you do what do you do to spice your food up then?
I use a lot of spices, different types of spices, to give it more flavor, and use chives and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a trick, and you learn on the way if it's good or not.
Jeannie in Lake Geneva has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. My question is if the doctor has had any experience using a device called Furosix, which allows the patient to deliver sub-Q doses of furosemide rather than going in the hospital for an IV when they get out of control using orals or can't take orals for some reason.
Yeah, Dr. Vijay?
Hi, thank you for that question. So the approved doses of Furosix is very minimal. If we are looking at option of needing IV diuretics, we try to provide it in the clinic setting itself rather than being admitted to the hospital. On an outpatient basis, like at home kind of a thing, so we do not have a very long-term data on that. We have that medicine available, but at a lower doses. Definitely there are medicines like Bumex or Bumetanide or Torsamide, Dimetex. So these medicines are more powerful and better absorbed through as a pill compared to the Lasix or the furosemide. So we usually try to use Bumex or torsemide as an alternative if we are having less effect with Lasix or furosemide. We have a heart failure clinic, so we are a little biased in saying that we can provide IV diuretics in our clinic situations. Most of the cardiology clinics are able to provide that too, so we are not using the Furosix as the option when we need an IV diuretics.
All right, Jeannie, thank you.
Available in the conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jeannie, for calling. How long, here's another email, how long can people survive once they've been diagnosed with congestive heart failure?
So if all depends on the stages. If you are diagnosed initially with heart failure and it's not very severe, needing hospitalizations or using heart pumping medicines called inotropes, we do a trial with medical therapy. As with Mr. Thompson, we did the primary cardiologist, Dr. Paul Kniffmeyer. He did a wonderful job of keeping him away from me for almost 20 years by doing medical treatment. So we tried that as the first line of treatment option. If these, the tricky part is to identify when things are not being controlled with the medical treatment. If we are diagnosing somebody with end-stage heart failure, we are looking at 50% survival in 6 months' time. And that is where the heart pump and heart transplant options become important for the patient.
Yeah, I 6 months' time, that's for sure. You mentioned, here's another email, you mentioned processed foods and lack of exercise. What role does alcohol play?
Alcohol plays a big role if you are not doing rare social events. So high alcohol can affect both sides of the heart. It can cause the heart to dilate. And when the heart starts dilating, they become not very functional because the muscles don't contract properly. We see situations when young patients who have alcohol history, and I mean heavy history, they get into heart failure, and once we start the heart medicines and they quit the alcohol completely, we see a recovery of the heart back to normal if they didn't have any other insults to the heart. So, yes, I don't drink, so I don't know what to say, how much you can drink, but I would avoid as much as possible. Our patients are very happy to do that, especially when they know that they had to see less of the doctors. So it is a win-win both ways.
Oh, here's another email for Rochelle or Roger. Do you have any dishes to recommend?
Eat a lot of fish and chicken, I guess. And I guess the best advice is to look at the foods you're buying and see how much sodium's in there. I mean, I was shocked at some of the stuff that I thought was good. So, yeah. I don't know. Everybody's taste is different. So, yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with fish or chicken, I guess.
Yeah. Well, he'll eat a good hamburger. So, but we tend to stay away from broth. He'll have them once in a while, but not as much as he used to. So, you learn.
Okay. I wondered how you were going to answer that, but you did a pretty good job of answering that. Are there... Dr. Vijay, how many people have you worked with this left ventricular assist device, and obviously it's something that you, well, you probably don't want to do it. You probably don't want to have to put it in anyone, but you have to sometimes. And I'm wondering about the success rate with the left ventricular assist device.
So I started practicing 2014-15 onwards, 2014-15, and we have the newest generation of the heart pump since 2017-18, if you say. So I feel that patients have a very good quality of life after the heart pump, and Johnson are an example of that. When we all work as a team, we succeed, and that is all kudos to the team. From our side, the coordinators are doing the heavy lifting, who are always for the patients 24/7. We give them a number to call us if there is any questions. So people like Ms. Tania, Ms. Kathleen, they are our coordinators, and they are very helpful in this endeavor. And the most important is the patient and the family. So without them, we are not successful. And I have always been blessed that whenever I see the success, I always have the patient and their spouse standing next to them, or their daughter or son or father or mother. You know, they all, as a team, we succeed. If you ask me what is the longevity, what is the complication rate, since the initial pump in 2000, we have come a long way. Our survival is almost 70% to 75% in the first 2 years, which is more than the national average. Our FREDET system data is that. And we have 50 to 60% survival by year five. Some of the reason why the survival cannot be fully assessed is because sometimes we do the heart pump as a bridge to transplant down the line transplant, so we have to take them away from the equation. So we have very good success rate. We are currently taking care of 33 heart pumps in our program, and we are expanding. So we are expecting more and more success with the technology as we have now. And the support team deserves a big kudos. So is the surgeon, Dr. Durham, and the team. So I would say, like, it's always a pleasure to work with the patient and the family, especially Mr. Thompson is, because it's always fun to have him. And I always jokingly say, you know, you put a device and knock on wood, no readmissions. No, they are not in the hospital. They just see me every quarter, say hi to me. That's a big pleasure for us to see them happy and doing what they like to do in their lives and seeing less of us.
Seeing less of you. Dr. Vijay, it's a good way to end. I want to thank you, all three of you, for being with us today. Dr. Vijay is cardiologist at FREDET and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Roger and Rochelle Thompson. Roger got his left ventricular assist device in 2023. Rochelle, married to Roger, supported him through his recovery. It was great to be able to talk with them today. And great to have you listening in today. Appreciate it very much. And also appreciate the work of our whole team here. Our producers, Clara Kniper, Joel Patnott, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive director, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store here on WPR News.